Welcome to the Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square invests in real estate across the nation, not just any real estate, but Class A and Class B apartment communities in the Southeast, along with medical and industrial facilities. Capital Square has a laser focus when it comes to investing in apartment communities. Our mission is to seek out the best Class A and B apartment communities in the Southeast, with an emphasis on Virginia, our home. In fact, Capital Square is the most prolific buyer of apartment communities in the region, from Richmond to my childhood home, Tidewater, well over $1 billion of apartment communities and growing. What drives Capital Square to invest in Virginia? Remember the old saying, it's the economy, stupid? Well, the Virginia economy is strong, and it's poised to get even stronger. We have discussed the strength of the multifamily asset class in prior shows. Throughout the pandemic, Capital Square's portfolio, now approaching 10,000 apartment units, has averaged 99% rent collection. Yes, 99% rent collection during a global pandemic. And the word is out about Virginia. Virginia is the number one state for business in the nation. We hear a lot about Texas and Florida and North Carolina, but not Texas, not Florida, not North Carolina. Virginia is the number one state for business in the entire nation. Why? In large part, due to Virginia's solid educational system. More on education in a moment with our guest. Virginia has captured top honors 5 times, more than any other state, and is the first state to notch back-to-back wins. During the campaign, Governor-elect Youngkin spoke to our audience. We discussed education and his day one plan to fund and improve the state's educational system. We will soon see his plan in action. Many of you know Capital Square is headquartered right here in Richmond. We are a growing employer. We've doubled in size in just the past few years. Capital Square, along with other employers in Virginia, enjoy a number of benefits. One of the best educated workforces in the nation, nearly 39% of workers have a bachelor's degree or higher, and Virginia has the third highest concentration of STEM workers, science, technology, engineering, and math. But is this enough for Virginia to stay on top? Going into the pandemic and coming out of it, Virginia's greatest strength has been its ability to nurture and retain talent. Public schools perform well in terms of test scores, and a world-class higher education system is reliably funded. But is this enough for the future? That is the topic for our guest, Don Finley, in just a moment. Back to CNBC's study, Virginia's strongest category is education, where it finishes a close second to perennial leader Massachusetts. With all of this as background, I'd like to introduce today's guest, Don Finley, president of the Virginia Business Higher Education Council, a partnership between business leaders and Virginia colleges and universities. Welcome, Don. Thanks for joining.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Should we address you as Dr. Finley, Mr. Finley, or Don?
I much prefer Don. Thank you.
All right, Don. You've been a leader in education for some time. Please tell our radio and podcast audience about your background as it relates to promoting education in the Commonwealth.
Well, for the last 2 decades, I've had the pleasure of being the president of the outfit that you talked about, our Virginia Business Higher Education Council, which, as you said, is a partnership between business leaders around the state and our college and university leaders, in most case presidents, with the community colleges, it would be the chancellor. But in any event, before that, I was in state government. I was Secretary of Education for a couple of governors. My focus was educational finance, basically. Before that, I was with headed up the Appropriations Committee of Virginia's House of Delegates. And before that, I was with the State Council for Education, which is our great coordinating board that continues to this day. So I love higher education. I love the people I've worked with. And it's been my pleasure to really work with some very distinguished Virginians, the names of which many of your listeners would recognize.
Oh, that is great. Let's talk about how to make Virginia the top state for education, to keep Virginia on top in the future as the number one state for business. Earlier this year, the Virginia Chamber surveyed 7,000 business people and asked, what factor has the largest impact on the state economy? Don, do you know the response to that question?
Oh, it's the same response they get from every survey they've done since the year 2013, and that's workforce and education, because a good workforce has to be really prepared for particularly the more complex and detailed work that is going on in our business and industry these days.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that in a moment, about the Amazon HQ2. The business community knows that education is key to our future success. So Don, please educate us on Growth for Virginia, a really cool name, Growth for Virginia.
Well, just give you and your listeners the vision for Growth for Virginia, because that's the big picture. First of all, it has basically 3 components that is defined, or our vision. And the first is that we want to give every Virginian access to an affordable talent pathway that really leads to a marketable degree or credential. You don't have to have a bachelor's degree necessarily to get a good job in Virginia. You can get a very good job with credential from a lesser time in our educational system. But we want that pathway to lead to a job, and we want to lead to a job in Virginia. Everybody knows if you pick up the paper these days or drive through a business community, you see the four, you know, we're here to hire today. So obviously talent is a big deal even now coming out of this pandemic. But anyway, number one, an affordable talent pathway leads to a workforce credential or a degree. We want those pathways to have a heavy component of a paid internship or other work-based learning experience. Not every student is going to want that, but we think a lot more will want it and will benefit from it. And we're only providing those internship opportunities for a relatively small number. The Virginia Chamber of Commerce, our partner in many of these our plans and what we do, they found that in their survey, their employers that they talked to, they had about 10% of their employees who had an internship or work-related experience, but they wanted to have 7 out of 10, 70%. That would be the preference from the business community. We want people who have not only a great education, but a part of that education needs to be an internship or some other work-related experience, because that's the way they get used to the work world. That's the way they know what our expectations are when they come to work for us. So internship or other work-based learning is part of the second part. And then to make that happen to the degree it has to happen in Virginia if we're going to move forward, is it has to be affordable. And it's not affordable enough now in Virginia. That's just the plain fact. And to make it more affordable, the state's going to have to put up more investment. They've been putting up more over the last number of years, particularly since 2011. But anyway, it's got to be a lot more affordable. It's got to be affordable so that the people who are first-generation students who come from communities who don't have the affluence to pay for, you know, high tuition at a college or university. So we've got to make it more affordable. We do that two ways. One, we keep tuition increases down. And the second way is we give financial aid. And those are the two keystones of a more affordable education. The need-based financial aid in Virginia goes to those who need it most, which goes to help those students I mentioned who are not going into higher education right now in the numbers that we need. You may have picked up the paper recently and seen some telling things that are not helpful, not healthy for our community, for our state, and that is that student aid applications that students fill out in their senior year of high school, the number of students filling that out is down. Enrollment in our community college is down this year, and it's not the first year it's been down. So we've got some serious issues to deal with, and we think that the plan we put forward can really do that. So that's our vision, pathways and affordability.
Very helpful. Excellent background. We'll come back to each of those themes in a moment, but let's start with a real world success story. Amazon's headquarters number 2 in Northern Virginia, we call HQ2. How did education play into the state winning the biggest economic prize of the decade, Dunk?
Well, our higher education system and its promise to provide the kind of talent that Amazon wanted in the state that it was going to locate in was the key to this thing. Stephen Murray, who unfortunately is leaving our state, heads up Economic Development Partnership. We have him on tape, and he'll say that the reason we got that headquarters is because of our higher education system and its ability to produce the kind of talent that not only Amazon, but a lot of other business and industries need to. So without Virginia's great higher education system, Amazon HQ2 would not be in Virginia.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, let's talk about something that's not quite so pleasant. I think this will surprise our audience and may irritate some. Virginia lags surrounding states in the amount it contributes towards undergraduate education. Virginia is $6,519 per student, $10,742 in North Carolina, and $8,800 in Maryland. I find that an irritating statistic, Don. Please discuss funding issues.
Well, you put your finger on it. We're at a serious competitive disadvantage in what we have to ask students to pay to go to our education system because we don't invest as much as our competing states, particularly in our region. And, you know, it's a pretty simple formula. For every dollar that the state puts in, tuition and fees don't have to come up with that dollar. And you can look at the trends over the last 25 years. Council of Higher Education has got them on their website. You can see that every time the state invests, tuition goes down or doesn't go up at all. And when the state doesn't invest, tuition goes up. It's a one-to-one thing. So you got to invest in making higher education affordable if you want to have the kind of talent we have and the kind of talent that these other states want and have because they are putting more money into higher education. They are our competitors. In some cases, we're losing out to them.
We need to talk about that. I know that the candidate, Youngkin, and Governor-elect Youngkin pledged more money. You're a business guy at your roots, and I'm a business guy. Have you had a chance to talk to the transition team about the plans for funding education?
I personally have not talked to him, but we have a large operation in connection with a lot of partners across the state. And our business leaders on our board have spoken and continue to confer with the Youngkin campaign, now the governor-elect's office. And that dates back to really June when we met with both candidates for governor, Terry McAuliffe and Glenn Youngkin. We met with them personally, representatives of our board, and outlined our Growth for Virginia plan for them. We talked to them about it early on before we actually went public with it. And Glenn Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe both came to the Workforce and Education Conference we had on October 20th, just about a month ago, and spoke in favor. Glenn Youngkin in particular mentioned Growth for Virginia and our pathways, talent, affordable pathways efforts.
Very promising. Both candidates pledged to support education, and we'll do everything in our power to get that number up to be competitive. Don, I understand that work experience is a key component of the Growth for Virginia plan. Why is work experience so important?
Well, work experience is important because employers tell us, it comes up in surveys we do and surveys that the Virginia Chamber of Commerce does, that the employers, and many of them tell us firsthand, members of our board who are in the business world, that the best employees they get and the ones they feel the best about in terms of what they can do for their businesses are those who have some work-related experience, preferably in their own enterprise. And this names that people recognize, like the business leaders, chief executives at Dominion, Altria, Micron. They say that when you have a student who comes to them to perform and begins to understand what the work world demands of them and what some people call the soft skills, like relating, working within teamwork, working with other people well, showing up on time in many cases. It just teaches them the habits that the work world needs. They're not necessarily habits that you learn on a college campus to the same degree that the businesses need. So we've learned over the last probably 5 or 6 years that if we want to have the best talent in Virginia, one component, not the only thing, but one component of their education has to be some work-related experience, such as an internship.
That's great. We'll drill down a little on internships. It takes me back to the 70s. I graduated from Northeastern University, not in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but in Boston in the mid-70s, before most of our employees were even born. And Northeastern is best known for its co-op work program. Don, why is an internship so important?
Well, I tried to speak to that a minute ago. I just think that it teaches you what the work world expects of you from the student's point of view, from the employer's point of view. It really says this is a young person, or perhaps age is perhaps not the only criteria or the only group that is attracted to it, to the experiences. But anyway, it lets the employer know that, you know, Lewis is really going to be a good employee, and because they have the qualities, not only intellectual qualities, but the work habits that we want. So it works for the employer, it works for the employee, for the student in this case. But basically, it's they get familiar with one another. And that results in just a better work situation for both parties.
Help transition the candidate from being a kid or a student to how to dress, how to talk, how to work in an employment setting. Understand there are a number of impediments to internships. What are they?
Well, one is, which we're working on, and the college presidents in particular are working on, is making sure if you have a well-structured internship or other work-related experience, that you get credit in your curriculum. It doesn't have to be an add-on. It maybe cost you another semester or year to get your degree or whatever you're seeking. And so you don't want to add to the number of years it takes for a degree. So that means you have to give a student a credit. That's not always been the case. And so the internship really has to be embedded in the curriculum of these college and universities. The second thing you have to do is to make it totally affordable to the institution. Many cases, and this again is a problem that college universities are addressing, is if you go into an internship, you don't get financial aid. If you don't get the financial aid, even if it's a paid internship, you need that financial aid to pay those other living experiences. Your internship experience may be 100 miles from the campus, and so you may have to rent an apartment. You obviously have to eat. You will have some transportation needs. So there's other expenses that go with it that if you have a paid internship, it does help with them, but it may not do all that is necessary to let a student know, yes, I can't afford to go take that internship in Richmond, Virginia, even though my campus is in Roanoke, for example.
So paid internships are some sort of a stipend or assistance for
exactly.
Students.
Essentially, you have to make it affordable for them.
Make it affordable. What can you do for employers? Let's say a small employer, even a larger employer that doesn't have a budget. Is there something you can do to help companies?
Well, the state would have to invest in providing incentive funding, maybe not the whole cost of the internship, but incentive fund that says for a small business that if you give us obviously well-structured internship experience to one of our students from one of our colleges or universities, that we will give you maybe a tax credit.
Great.
We It can take that form. It can take actually a cash supplement that would be a incentive, not pay the whole cost of it. But they're going to need some, the smaller businesses, you're quite correct, and they tell us, do need additional financial help that their own enterprises may not have to provide. So to scale up in a big way on internships, we got to include not just the big employers, but the smaller employers who want to do this, obviously. And so you got to incentivize them, and actually you incentivize them by giving enough financial assistance that it makes it affordable for them on their end.
Let's put that on the list of programs for the transition team, because it's so very important. We need a pipeline of qualified workers for Capital Square and other Virginia companies. This is really critical to our success, staying on top as the number one state for business. A little different focus on the next question, Don. How do we align our curriculum with workforce needs to better connect industry and education?
Well, these affordable pathways have to be a much closer connection, or built with a much closer connection between business and industry, businesses around the state, and college universities. The college universities are going to need to scale up their ability. Some people call them mini campuses. They're called, the career center, the career guidance center, that type of thing. Many of them are small, too small to handle the number of students that we have in mind getting these work-related experience. But the college universities have to really organize in a way that they have not in the past organized to reach out to the business community and say, we can help you with the kind of talent you need. And if you will tell us that you can hire some interns, we'll send some down for you to interview and see if you'd like to hire them. But you really got to organize and structure this. And you have to do it in a partnership, really, between a college university and a business or businesses, as the case may be. Right now, it's done most often, not always, but on many college campuses, it's done within the department, maybe even by a single faculty member, happens to know somebody in the business world, lines up a work experience, an internship for Don Finley to work. We're doing it sort of ad hoc, depending on what individual faculty and departments, some cases schools, the engineering schools for years have had, and I don't know what kind of cooperative education you had at Northeastern, but Virginia Tech has had for, my gosh, probably 75 years, a co-op program, but it's run out of the engineering school. We're talking about similar things scaled up across the entire curriculum of a college or university, or most of it at least.
We sure need that. Nothing wrong with French literature, but I think the STEM training is what we need for the future, jobs of the future.
Yep.
Don, are there any fast-forward-like programs that offer short, maybe 6 to 12 week credential programs in high-demand fields?
Our CommuniCos system has really stepped up in that regard. They have these kinds of credential programs running in many areas, which do address workforce shortages in the region, in the community, some of them statewide. Give you a classic example. The community college system, particularly in Southside Virginia, has truck driving schools. If you drive down the road, and when I drive down the road these days, you go by an operation, you'll see drivers wanted, CDL credentials, and so forth. And so our community colleges in particular have really stepped up and met those workforce shortages, particularly in what are known as the middle skills, but not necessarily a job that requires a bachelor's degree, at least, yeah. Maybe not even an associate degree, but does require training in a skilled profession. And so there are many of these. We've done it in a targeted way in that field, as we've done it in, you mentioned earlier, at the higher level, bachelor's and actually graduate degrees in the IT field, which was a major part of attracting Amazon. But you can do it and should do it at all levels, whether it's middle skills or it's something that requires a master's or maybe even a doctorate in IT.
Well, that's interesting. Let's say I'm interested in welding. Is there a program for me?
Yes, depending on the locality you're in right now. But welding is one of the things that I'm familiar with. Newport News Shipbuilding, Newport News, Virginia.
Absolutely.
They hire, as you might imagine, they hire a lot of welders. They have a lot of programs going that they conduct themselves, where they have a great apprentice school. Talk about work-based learning. Their apprentice school is a classic example. But they also have cooperative programs with the local and regional community colleges in their area to train more welders. As I said, where these shortages in particular skills, like welding, it's a good example, truck drivers is another, there are many. Our community colleges have stepped up and given short courses that lead to a credential that really provide there are cases we have it on tape of where a student who goes through one of these credential programs as short as 6 weeks comes out and is able to double their salary. That's a big transition for that student and his family to have twice as high a salary as they had, 6 months ago.
And unbelievable job opportunities, such a shortage of workers. We talked about internships and how an internship can help turn out a young person to be ready for a job. Would you start at an earlier date? Would you start in middle school, helping get kids prepared for their future?
I wouldn't say prepared for it. This is just myself. A better person to answer that would be somebody who works with middle school students. But what we should be bringing to their attention is the array of potential of jobs out there that may suit them individually, given their talents and interests for that matter. I think we just need to let them know the opportunities. It's not so much preparing them to be, you know, anything specific at the middle school level, you know, to be a welder or anything, but just make sure they know there's a whole range of these things that is out there for you. And you may not be the student who wants or would benefit greatly from getting a bachelor's degree. You may be the very student who will be a great electrician, and all you need, if that, is an associate degree from one of our community colleges to even start your own business. There's another field that is in great demand these days. Electricians, welders, plumbers, all of these are big shortages for you and I in our homes, much less big business. But anyway, those kinds of possibilities, you and others on this call, and certainly in my, I grew up in Hopewell, a business community, industry community, not too far from here. And we had a lot of students who went on to great paying jobs, and they did not ever get a bachelor's degree. I can think of my close friend Herbert, who ended up heading up the maintenance operations at the Anheuser-Busch operation in outside of Williamsburg. He never would have benefited from a college education, the kind that I got. Just wasn't his cup of tea. And we need to let students know that people are different and they can do different things and they can do things better than others. It just depends on what it is that suits their talents.
So there's a quality job for every kid with whatever their talent.
But I'd give them the information at the middle school level. It's not necessary or probably, in my judgment, start them that early in a particular line of training, if you will.
Don, this has been a fascinating discussion on education. We could go on all day, but I'm afraid our time is running short. Bottom line, we need to connect students, educators, and businesses that create the job. And the business community is asking for this, and the colleges want to do it. Don, how will you make it happen so Virginia will keep the Amazons, the Facebooks, the CoStars, and many, many more companies coming to the Commonwealth so we can stay on top as the number one state for business?
Well, Virginians will do it because I think they will step up when they realize the great potential of what we're suggesting in this Growth for Virginia program. They realize that you've just mentioned the business community wants it. The business community is willing to support it and will encourage our elected leader to support it. And the college universities know that they need to do it to provide the kind of talent we need. And I will say from my perspective, Virginia has the leadership in place across the business world and in the college university world to make this really happen. And I think that based on the track record of the Republicans, Democrats, Independents in the General Assembly over the last number of years and more, the last 10 years in particular, our elected leaders will step up. They have been stepping up. It's not a partisan issue. It's a Virginia issue, too. And I just think that if we make this investment, I believe that it will happen because Virginians want it to happen, and they'll let their elected leaders know that.
Well, that's great. Thank you, Don Finley, president of the Virginia Business Higher Education Council and Growth for Virginia. You can count Capital Square in for internships and other programs. Count us in. You can count our colleagues in. Please make us a part of your important programs to help Virginia stay number one top state for business. Thanks again.
Thanks, Lewis. Enjoyed it.
Have a good day.
This is Lewis Rogers, founder and CEO of Capital Square Realty Advisors. Thank you for joining today's episode of The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square. It has been a record year at Capital Square. In just the first half of the year, Capital Square acquired $565 million of real estate for 1031 exchange, DST programs, Opportunity Zone funds, and the Apartment REIT. The firm will acquire well over $1 billion of real estate this year for investment programs. And several investment programs have been taken full cycle. That is, when their properties have been sold, and many have been sold for record prices. This year has been off the chart for real estate investment in spite of the pandemic. For more information about Capital Square, contact me at lrogers@capitalsquare1031.com or 877-626-1031. Please join me, Lewis Rogers, same time next week when we discuss cutting-edge real estate topics of interest locally and nationally. Invest locally, invest nationally, invest with Capital Square on a tax-advantaged basis. Living in the sweet Virginia breeze.
Sweet Virginia breeze. The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Louis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.